And he also instilled in me this belief that, oh, I can do that. You know, even if it sounds impossible, like, just try it. You know, what's going to happen?
Right.
Maybe you can't do it. Oh, well, go on to the next thing.
And that's quite honestly what this show is all
And
about.
I love that. I
Yeah.
love it.
Welcome to episode 12 of the I Could Never Do That podcast. I'm your host, Carrie Barrett, and each week I talk to athletes and artists and entrepreneurs who are living lives that most of us could only dream about. And this week's guest is Austin-based fitness journalist Pam LeBlanc. I'm not going to lie, the woman kind of has my dream gig, getting paid to try new sports and activities, hikes, and other crazy adventures around the state of Texas. So if you live around Central Texas, you've no doubt followed Pam in the Austin American Statesman and her popular Fit City column and blog. And Pam, let it be known, is the real deal. And by that I mean she was actually raised in Austin. What? A local? I know. It really is too good to be true. So even if you're not familiar with Pam and her work, you will no doubt gain a tremendous amount of respect for her and inspiration from her. Because if you think Pam was born a natural and gifted athlete, think again. She talks very openly about her awkward years and horrible low self-esteem that held her back from doing so many things. It wasn't all trophies and finish lines for this woman. Good Lord, no. She developed courage in spite of her fears. And it's that courage that keeps pushing her to try new things, whether it's, brace yourself, running a naked 5K, rappelling off of a building in a Wonder Woman costume, or even writing her first novel. None of those take any kind of athletic prowess. They take bravery, and Pam LeBlanc musters it every day. After hiking the John Muir Trail a couple of years ago with her husband, Pam decided to start writing about her year of adventure. Well, after listening to this, I think you'll agree that Pam has had the life of adventure. Enjoy. It is awesome to talk to you, Pam LeBlanc. Huge fan. I can be safely saying that anyone that's in the fitness world in Austin pretty much wants your job.
Oh, so. I do have the best job in not only in Austin, but in America, possibly the world, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So are you got a little cough? Are you feeling okay? You going to retire soon?
No, sorry. No, can't have my job. No, they'll have to arm wrestle me for it. Although people always think that they want my job, but when it comes down to it, when they realize what it actually entails, then they're a little less eager.
Are you like one of those memes that like, what people think about my
yeah,
job
and what,
and
it,
then,
actually
like, what
is.
It actually is. You're just sitting in, you know, in your bed writing on your laptop. That's pretty much what
insanity.
It is. Yeah. Well, the insanity plays out quite well, both online and in the paper with your Fit City blog. You are the voice of the Austin fitness community.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. And well, I'd say the voice, the eyes and the ears, quite honestly, because you do some amazing things. And how do those things come to you? Is it people solicit or do you seek?
It's both. But my main mission is what I realized early on in this business is that the more story ideas that I pitched to my bosses, the less that they would assign stuff to me. So I just started doing stuff. And the more I started doing stuff, the more people suggested stuff. So I have a never ending supply of story ideas, especially in Austin.
Yeah. How long have you been at the Statesman?
I've been at the Statesman since 1998. And I think the Fit City column started maybe 12-ish years ago. I can't remember for sure. But I remember pitching the column to my bosses and they were like, well, that might work, maybe. Why don't you try it for 6 months and we'll see if you run out of ideas. Well, you know, that was many moons ago.
What was your beat before?
I started in Williamson County just doing kind of covering school board and city council and just kept pitching ideas to the features department. I really wanted to move to the features department and they kept saying there's no job opening here, but finally, we worked it out.
Yeah. And journalism, college degree, was that your major in college?
I went to Texas A&M. I grew up in Austin.
We got to get to that. Yeah.
But went to Texas A&M and was interested.
We love you anyways.
Thank you. And I studied ag journalism because I was interested in forestry and the outdoors, but was also interested in writing and had started with an English scholarship. So I've always loved to write, but I wanted to do something outdoorsy, thought those would kind of tie the two interests together. So no, I've never really written about, you know, pigs and cows and sheep, but it worked out for me.
Yeah, I'd say so. And tell me about growing up in Austin, because I moved here the year you started at the Statesman.
Oh,
so
crazy.
I moved to Austin in 1998 as a young 24-year-old girl who didn't know anything, didn't know anyone in this town, and you were just starting here. So what was it like growing up
in
Austin?
Well, I remember when 183 and Burnett Road was a four-way stop.
Oh, my gosh. And now it's the spaghetti bowl of highway connection.
It was great. I was actually born in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and moved here when I was four. So do the math. I'm 53 now. But
I have to stop you there temporarily because I grew up in Columbus, Ohio. So it is a wonder that we're in the same room.
Midwesterners.
Yes. Yeah. And Michigan versus Ohio State, which never the two are supposed to connect.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to leave right now.
Yeah.
No. But loved Austin. Have always loved Austin. After I got out of college, I took a job at a small paper in Plano outside of Dallas. Was just doing various things, everything from copy editing to covering fashion briefly, which is kind of hilarious, schools and all kinds of things. Then went from Plano down to McAllen in far south Texas and covered an assortment of things there, mostly features, started doing a humor column.
Oh my God.
And then, which is funny, and then was the deputy metro editor, which sounds like an old west label, but was supervising a staff of, I don't know, 10 or 12 reporters. Kept trying to get back to Austin, and I think they interviewed me three or four times and finally hired me, and I came back.
Man, was the Statesman the only paper in town, or was this a city that at one point had two papers?
At one point there were two papers in Austin, but that was before I came back to Austin.
Okay.
So when I was in high school, I can't even remember the name of it. And there's also the Chronicle, but that's more of an entertainment.
Yeah. Well, I just remember growing up, we had a morning paper that would come out. And then an afternoon edition of a completely different paper that would come out back in the good old days.
Yeah.
And I remember that vividly because I was a paper delivery girl.
Oh, great.
Yeah, that was my entry into journalism. Were you always an explorer of sorts?
Yes. And I think I credit my dad for that. My dad was always really curious. And growing up in Austin, he had a book. And my dad passed away 3 years ago, almost it'll be 3 years in another week or so. But when we were kids, he had this book that was called something like 100 Adventurous Things to Do Around Austin or in Central Texas. I wish I could find that book now. I asked him about it, but he couldn't remember the title. But we kind of went through that book, and we never traveled exotically, but he instilled this curiosity in me about where I live and about Texas and the hill country. And we would go down the list and go to Enchanted Rock or camp. We camped a lot as kids. We had bunk bed cots in this giant tent. Hilarious. I have two older sisters. So we would go up to Inks Lake and camp. He wasn't particularly outdoorsy, but he had an insatiable sense of curiosity. And he also instilled in me this belief that, I can do that. You know, even if it sounds impossible, just try it. You know, what's going to happen?
Right.
Maybe you can't do it. Oh, well, go on to the next thing.
And that's quite honestly what this show is all about.
And I love that.
Yeah.
I love it. I have a philosophy. Another woman in town and I sort of came up with this thing that we call the get your hair wet philosophy. And we always talk about, when you go to Barton Springs or you go to the pool or wherever, and there's people in the water, but if you look closely, it's mostly guys and kids. And all the women, the moms, the girlfriends are sitting on the edge of the pool because they don't want to get their hair wet. They don't want to mess up their makeup. And we're like, screw it. We're getting in. We're all in. So, get in the water and don't worry about what anybody else thinks of you.
Well,
it's a mantra for life.
That is, oh my God. That's actually, that sort of just blew my mind for a second because it really is indicative of you and your persona that you at least put out in the public.
Right.
in that you're always jumping, you're always in the air, right, or you're always in water.
Yeah,
that's my happy place. Were you a swimmer growing up?
I never swam competitively, but it makes me a little bit sad because my mom says when I was three, she put me in the pool, the neighborhood pool, and I said, well, how do I swim, Mom? And then I swam across the pool, and she said, pretty much like that. So I don't know. No one else in my family is a swimmer, an athlete, or anything. And so I've always loved to swim. I love to be in the water, but I never swam in college. Nobody ever pushed me to do anything athletic as a kid because nobody in my family did that. It was before Title IX. And looking back on it now, I wish somebody had because I feel like I could have swum for a small school. I mean, I'm not particularly fast, but I might have been fast enough to swim for a small school or something. But anyway, I love it now. I've been swimming masters for, I don't know, 20 years or something.
I think it's time for you to compete, I guess.
Well, I compete a little, you know, I've done some stuff like I do some open water swim races and I've done some triathlons and stuff like that. But, and even some USMS meets, I swam around Manhattan Island with a partner for the Manhattan Island Marathon Swim. And that's, I can't remember if it's 26 or 20. I think it's 28 miles.
I think it's 28 because I interviewed Katie Dooley.
Oh, yeah.
Another local marathon swimmer. And I do remember her saying it was 28 miles. So, mud and muck. And
Yeah. And every river tastes different, as we say.
And so what does Austin mean to you having grown up here and now having the distinct pleasure of getting to see it from very unique perspectives?
Oh, I love Austin. It's too hot.
yeah.
But otherwise, I love Austin. It's changed a lot. I know people complain about the changes. And sure, there's a lot of things that I miss about old school Austin, but there's a lot of great things about Austin now and just the vibrance of the city and going downtown and the running community here and the swimming community here and the stand-up paddleboard community here and the wake surfing. I mean, there's all this outdoor stuff that we have the opportunity to do year-round because of our climate. And it's not just the climate, it's the people who are here that make it possible.
How would you describe Austin, or how do you describe Austin to an outsider? You know, I wrote down in my notes, like, do you describe it or think of it as a big playground? Is it what I view it as, like a small town in a big city?
Yeah, that's a good way to think of it. It's a big city. I don't think there's any denying that now, you know, with the traffic, but I avoid the traffic by riding my bike to work.
That's so great.
That kind of keeps it a small town for me. I live in Allendale, so it's about a 7.5 mile bike ride to and from work. But when I'm describing it, I guess I always come back to the people. And I think the people here are friendly and the fitness community is very welcoming. And if you're trying to learn something new, right now I'm trying to learn how to surf. And people are just, they want to help you out with stuff. And it's not just the fitness community. I'm a writer, but I'm trying to get better at my photography. And so I love to take pictures. And I know a lot of photographers in the area. And so many of them have just bent over backwards to help me learn how to do stuff. So it's always about the people. And I love the people here.
Yeah, I just feel like if you put the word out on any social channel.
Right.
Exactly. I've learned that with this podcast. You just ask, and people are so willing.
Right.
And it's so refreshing that
it is.
A lot of the gatekeepers and the door closers just don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
We have access to, you know, to our favorite artists or favorite writers that I'm sitting across from right now. Do you consider yourself extroverted or introverted, or do you have to work that balance?
It's funny. I'm an introvert, actually. People find that surprising, but I put on my extrovert cap at work and it's like I'm a different person. But I grew up very introverted and shy and completely nerdy and had buck teeth and a very low self-image and all of that stuff. And so it's, but when I'm at work, it's different. But I think journalism gives me permission to be an extrovert, even though I'm not an extrovert. So at first it was really, really hard for me. But now I'm so used to it. I can go out and ask people questions and it's like I flip the switch, right? And then when I go home, it's kind of exhausting.
Is Chris, your husband, like, hello?
Yeah.
You can keep talking.
And he's so supportive and kind and helps me out a lot. But yeah, I mean, I had really bad overbite when I was a kid. People made fun of me and called me a saber-toothed tiger. And then, you know, it was just, I had jaw surgery when I was in my 20s to correct that because I had TMJ, my jaws were grinding, but it really changed the way my face looks. So my lips didn't close around my teeth. And I just felt really, you know, I think about it now, it's going to make me tear up. But yeah. So it gave me, anyway, but now I feel very confident in my career. And so that has kind of given me like, wow, you know, all those kids made fun of me when I was little, but now
look at me now.
Look at me now.
Right?
I feel good about that.
And I would say, oh, you're just exaggerating, but you know what?
Yeah.
You've actually been you've posted some of those photos.
Yeah, I know. I love to post them because it makes me, I don't know. It makes me reflect back and think it's another example of, I didn't think I could do, you know, there I am. I don't know.
No, it's okay. I've been called Barbara Walters recently. So I'm just bringing it out. Well, again, kindred spirits, because growing up, I was a total tomboy, way overweight. I had big, gigantic boobs, like ridiculous boobs.
I mean, I was just
I was just an awkward caricature.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I moved here and found running, of all things, that I will always credit my very first Austin Marathon as like some form of a rebirth. And I still feel that, you know, that you don't lose that person.
Yeah.
That little girl
is still there. It's
She's
a separate person inside you.
It's just a separate
person.
It's funny.
But I think sports and swimming, or for me, or running for you, gives you the confidence that spills over into other parts of your life.
Definitely. And do you think that, and I'm not even sure if this is a question or an observation, but it's awkward because sports force you to get out of your comfort zone. They force you to try new things and to really go into the unknown. Were you conscious when you started this job and you go on these adventures that every time you do that and get out of your comfort zone, you're almost chipping away at that old identity?
I never consciously thought of that, but I see it now. I mean, I see it now because even when I started in journalism, I wasn't necessarily doing this. I wasn't going out and finding crazy things to do and challenging myself. But I think the more I did it, the more the confidence built. Mm-hmm. And now we kind of joke. It's like, you know, I'm no stranger to self-humiliation. Like I'll just put it all out there. I no longer care, really.
Oh, I love being in your 40s and 50s.
I know, right?
Yeah,
it's pretty funny.
Well, speaking of putting yourself out there and adventures, you chronicle them so well on all your social channels and on the Fit City blog, both online and in the paper. You created this whole year of adventure that you started last year. But before we get to that, because I really want to address that separately, because that's more of a personal thing for you that you are writing about, but it seems like a personal mission.
Yeah.
With the Fit City blog and the Statesman writing, you're still doing all of these wonderful adventures, but it's almost for the benefit of the community.
You know, it's good. I'm glad, because really the mission is not to say, hey, look what I did. It's to say, hey, look what's out there and look what you can do and don't be afraid to try it. And we're lucky in Austin that we have so many things that you can try and do.
Oh, yeah. And that was going to be a question, which is, what is your purpose on the Fit City side? Is it truly to showcase Austin? Obviously, it's not to showcase yourself. Is it to showcase Austin? Is it to make people feel grateful for this playground that we do live in?
Yeah, well, my number one goal is not to necessarily highlight elite athletes, which I do that too, because I am fascinated by elite athletes and have written about a number of them. But what I want to do is encourage the person who doesn't do anything, who sits on the couch, who has never thought they could even walk a 5K or whatever, just to get up and go for a walk, or to get up and do something, just to move. Like, my mission is move your body. I promise you, you'll feel better. I have never gone to swim practice and regretted it, because even if I feel grumpy in the morning, you know, I know that I'm going to feel better afterwards. And there's a story I always tell. When my husband and I got married, we've been married 19 years, and when we first got married, he knew I was a swimmer, obviously, but he didn't quite understand the lunacy of it, I guess. One morning he said, "Hey, we've got a lot of errands to run today. Do you think you could skip swim practice this morning and we'll just run those errands?" And I was like, "Yeah, I guess so. Okay, well, never again." Like, I was grumpy pants all day long. Yeah. And he was like, "We'll all be happier if Pam swims." So it's true. It's like, I know that if I'm in a bad mood and I go for a run or I go for a bike ride or whatever, I'm going to feel better afterwards.
That's so true. And I have to say, even my husband now, when we met, he wasn't into any of this stuff at all. So
yeah,
I feel lucky in that he embraced it right along with me. But sometimes he has to be at work at 6 a.m. And now probably 4 of the 5 days of the week, he gets up at 4 a.m. and just to run like 30 minutes.
Wow.
Just to do exactly what you just alluded to, which is
clear your head, start your day.
Yeah. And it's, you know, he doesn't want to get up at 4 a.m, but it feels like it gives him power. It gives him control. And it does. It sets the tone. So it's so important. And I'm not saying that people have to get up at 4 a.m. because I sure don't. But find that time.
Right.
Find that thing that is uniquely you.
And it works differently for different people. Like, for me, I need to get my exercise in first thing in the morning. So some people, it works in the afternoon or the middle of the day, whatever.
Yeah.
Not everybody is the same.
Now, kind of shifting to this year of adventure. And I think some of the articles that you've published have been in conjunction with that.
Yeah.
You started promoting this about a year ago, or did it kick off with 2017?
So I'll tell you the genesis of the year of adventure. So I've always kind of loved this stuff. And really, if you look back, I've been doing it kind of all along, but just never promoted it this way. But a little over a year ago in the summer, the end of the summer of 2016, my husband and I like to backpack, and we've done, you know, shorter trips, 5-day, 7-day trips. Well, we decided that we were going to hike the John Muir Trail, and we planned it for a couple of years, and it was a 15-day trip. So we went to California, and I was dealing with plantar fasciitis at the time. And so I hadn't been able to run, and I was really worried about how my foot was going to hold up, because it's a grueling hike. It's 220 or 30 miles, I can't remember. And you cover something like 11 mountain passes, and you're backpacking. So you're carrying a backpack, which changes everything. So
how many pounds, like 50, 60 pounds on your back?
No, we're ultralight. So most people out there are like 40, 50 pounds, but my backpack was 28 pounds. So fully loaded with 9 days of food. So we're very, you know, I'm breaking toothbrushes in half and all that, because I don't want to carry extra weight. And I have some lower back issues too. So we did it. We went to California and we started the hike. And 3 days in, my foot was just killing me. My toes were smashed up. And what I figured out was that I had an insert in my trail runners to elevate my heel for the plantar fasciitis. It was tipping my foot forward. I was smashing my toes into the front of my shoes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. And so I was in pain, and I remember saying, "Chris, I can't do this. I can't do this." Well, he was like, "Well, let's just get to the midway point where resupply is, and we'll reassess there." I figured out, you know, the toe bashing thing, wrapped my toes, took the insert out. Things got a lot better. Got to the midway point. We're like, okay, we can go on. And then the second half of that trip is where you hit all the big passes. And, you know, 14,000 foot passes, you're going, there is no flat on the trail. It's all up or down. Maybe there's a quarter of a mile of flat. It's insane. But yeah. So I, and you know, it was hard. I know it's not this hard for everybody, but it was hard for me. And I can remember one particular day, we're going up a pass. We started at the bottom. There was a lake there where we camped. We are hiking up this pass, and we've been hiking for like 4 hours. I'm like, Chris, I just don't know if I can do this. This is just effing hard. And he said, but Pam, look, remember where we started and look down right now. And we looked down, and that lake that we had camped next to is a little glinting dime way down at the bottom. And I was like, you know, it's kind of a cliche, but it's so true. It's like you take little steps and you just keep going. There was never one particular step on that backpacking trip that was impossible to do. It was just cumulatively, it was very hard. So I was like, shit, I can do it. And so we did make it, and it was awesome. We had several problems along the way, which I won't go into, but we got through, and it was just awesome. And finishing that, just, I can just remember eating a cheeseburger at the end. I mean, I was starving. Like, I was bumming food off people on the trail.
Oh my gosh.
It was insane. It's a calorie deficit that catches up with you as you go. But anyway, it was the best. I loved it so much. I love camping and being outside and hiking, and everything is distilled down to walking and setting up camp and eating and the basics, and it's beautiful. So finished that and kept turning that over in my head, that feeling that I had when I looked down at that tiny glinting lake. And I was like, you know, I love the adventure and I love getting into something that I'm not sure that I can actually do. And then to actually be able to do it just as like a jolt of, I don't know what, you know, I'm not an adrenaline junkie, but just to realize that you can do things you can't do is so empowering. So I got back, started thinking about it. And then like, I don't think we officially declared it my year of adventure until like March or something. And then I just announced, you know, this is going to be my year of adventure, which everyone keeps asking, when's it going to end? I'm like, well, it's not. It's going to go on forever.
Yes, so I hope it doesn't.
It's the life of adventure now. So it's been super fun, and it's been like a snowball. The more I write about it, the more people give me ideas and invite me to do stuff. And it just has taken on a life of its own. And it's been pretty fun.
So some of the other adventures, and I could do a whole separate interview with you on the John Muir Trail about food and training and all that stuff. I know one of the adventures, and I'm not even sure if you considered this one of the adventures, but I saw photos and videos of you standing on the 10-meter platform at the University of Texas Swim Center.
That was one of the adventures because I have a fear of heights. And I mean, literally one time I was backpacking in Glacier and I had to take off my backpack and give it to Chris, my husband. And then I crawled on my hands and knees for like an eighth of a mile. It was sheer drop offs, just scared the bejeebers out of me. So, told you my dad passed away, and my dad's best friend just called one day and said, I want to jump off a 10-meter platform. He's 70. I think he's 73 now, actually. And I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. So I knew someone at the UT Swim Center, and they arranged it. They got some coaches out there, and they stair-stepped us up. We started at a little short diving board and got higher and higher, and we were just jumping feet first. But when you get up, so we did, I think, 3 meter, 5 meter, 7 meter, and 10. 5 meter is actually kind of scary. Mm-hmm. 7 meter is, okay, very scary, I'm not going to lie. 10 meters, you're at the ceiling, and 10 meters does not sound that high, but it's really high. It's 30, whatever it is, 33, 30, I don't know.
Yeah.
And from up there, the thing is the surface of the water is 10 meters down, but the surface is clear. And then it's another 16 feet below that to the bottom of the pool. Plus your head, where your brain is, you know, 5.5 feet above the platform. So no, it's scary. And just that free falling thing. I actually have skydived a long time ago, and I don't know how I won't ever do that again. But the fear of heights is crippling to me. So they got us through it. We had good coaches.
Yeah,
it was scary.
Did you just do it once, or did
you? Oh no! Okay. I mean, once off the 10 meter. I'll never do it again. Check that one off. But I'm glad I did. It was cool, and we got some readers. I put a call out there, and we picked three other people to do it. And we all got through it. Some of us had a harder time with it than others.
Yeah, I almost threw my proverbial hat in the ring and quickly went, you know what? Nah, don't need to do that yet.
It's a good psychology experiment, just what goes through your head and just, you know, what people are saying, like, oh my gosh. And you have to fight through some crazy stuff.
Well, and then similarly, speaking of fighting through some crazy stuff, you rappelled off of a building.
Oh, yes.
Hey, what in a Wonder Woman costume.
Yes, yes. Somebody gave me a Wonder Woman costume like 5 or 6 years ago, and it's come in very useful. And that was another scary one. Well, of course. But it was hard because if you weigh more, you can rappel faster because it's a counterweight thing. I don't exactly understand, but... So I was having to hoist the rope up with every... So it literally took me 25 minutes to get down that building. I never once turned my head around and looked. I was scared to death. And I just felt like even when I knew that the harness was going to hold me, I had this, you know, irrational fear that something was going to fail and I was going to plummet down the side of the building. And I can remember going down the side of the building and... the windows, every now and part of it was on stone or something, and part of it was on windows. And when I'd go over, the windows was really freaky because I could see the reflection of the skyscrapers behind, well, skyscrapers, the tall buildings behind me. So that was kind of, oh my gosh. And I just remember they put a GoPro on me, and when they got the footage back, everything on it had to be beeped out because I just essentially cussed for 20 minutes straight all the way down.
And you know what's cool and unique about
this effing building?
And you're allowed to say those on this show,
okay,
by the way. You don't want to ruin your reputation. What's unique about those two instances, and probably many others, is that neither of those had anything to do with athletic ability.
Right.
You didn't have to train
to
jump off of a board or rappel down
it's
a building.
Fear.
It was that is all about facing your fears.
So hard.
So as you're going through this year and planning and plotting certain activities, are you being spontaneous with some of them, or a lot of these planned out far
it's
in advance?
It's a little bit of both. You know, some of them I had planned out and some of them are events. Like I did the naked 5K run.
Oh God. Which... See, that just makes me want to, like, that brings back all of my overweight big boob fears. Oh, God.
And you know, that was weird, but once everybody took the pants off, it was kind of okay. Like, okay, nobody out here has a perfect body. We're all just human beings.
Yeah.
And when we started to run, it was just like any other race, kind of.
Yeah. Did you train at Hippie Hollow? How did you train for that one?
Didn't train. Actually, and that was, I had plantar fasciitis and couldn't run for a year and a half. Ran one time on Lady Bird Lake and then ran
with
the 5K
clothes.
Run. With clothes. And then did the 5K run and actually won the woman's race, which doesn't mean I'm fast, I will say, because I'm not. But there were maybe 130 people in that race and 30 women, and it was just something goofy to do.
Yeah.
So it was strange, but you know, after the race was over, I immediately put my clothes on and packed up, and I had a couple of friends with me, and we left and laughed really, really, really
hard. And no
hard.
One looked at each other for the whole time.
It was funny. I highly recommend that experience.
Was it here in town?
It was in McDade, which is maybe 30 or 45 minutes
east
of town. Yeah, there's a nudist camp out there, and they put it on every year. And interestingly, the people who are running that race, I don't think any of them live there. Those people just put it on. And the people that run it are mostly from Austin and stuff. And I ran into at least 3 or 4 people that I knew whose names shall not be revealed. And I was not allowed to tell who it was, but
awkward.
It was a little hilariously surprising who showed up at that race.
I'll tell you what, that'd probably be my fastest 5K ever. Because I would just want to
maybe
get...
Maybe that's why I ran. Maybe that's why I won it, right?
Man. So again, that didn't have much to do with athletic prowess much as it did just facing these crazy
things. And that's what I have learned. I was like, you know what? Nobody else is going to remember... You know, I don't... If you want to try something, just try it. And don't worry so much about what other people are going to think. It's get your hair wet, you know?
Yeah, I love that. And speaking of getting your hair wet, another one of your favorite hobbies. I know you water ski every Monday morning on the lake, but you are taking some surfing lessons.
Well, I'm not taking lessons, but okay. I have been surfing out at Inland Surf Park, and I've gone maybe 5 times now, and I love it. And of course I would love it because it involves water, and I'm a water skier, slalom skier, so it's a no-brainer that I would become addicted to it. So I got so excited about it that now I have signed up for a women's surf camp in Nicaragua next year. So that'll be part of my year of adventure that keeps going
going.
Yeah, and it's for beginners and it's women only, so I think it'll be kind of non-threatening and it's in a beautiful place, and you stay in a little grass hut, and you know there's outdoor showers and.
Is that put on by Kimmery over the Expedition School?
No, Kimmery's a friend of mine, but no, it's called Surf with Amigas, and it's put on by a former professional surfer, a woman who she runs several camps down there. And I know a couple of people who have been to this camp and recommended it to me, so I can't wait. Yeah. It's going to be awesome.
And those are the ones that I rattled off are just a few of the ones that I remember that have stuck out in my brain, which... Do you have any that have been favorites of yours?
I know I kind of draw blank when I'm trying to think of it, but I just got back from Belize. I'm a scuba diver too, and I've been scuba diving for years. And of course I've been scuba diving with sharks. But I was like, I kind of build that as my swimming with sharks, episode. So I think that story's out today or this week, actually. I've been to the Galapagos Island and swum with schooling hammerheads, like 200 at a time, and they don't care about you. So this was just a handful of sharks, black tip reef sharks, and they're really not interested. Although somebody in the group that I was with was spearfishing. They were spearfishing for invasive lionfish. So the grand motive was good. We don't want lionfish on the reef because they're taking over in the Caribbean. They're eating native fish. They're not native to this area. And so they're eating baby native fish, and they're causing an imbalance on the reef. But this guy was spearfished for lionfish while there were other divers in the area, and he got nipped. He got nipped by a nurse shark, which is funny because I think of a nurse shark as kind of a big catfish. It's usually kind of just laying on the bottom. Yeah. But it was interesting to see because the nurse shark got very agitated and took the lionfish and then wanted more.
Oh,
so took a little piece out of the guy's leg. So
right. And you were there?
I did not see it actually happen, but I was in the water and when he came out and his bloody leg.
See,
so he's fine. But
this is what's amazing is that you know you see that,
yeah,
and you're like, I'll get in the water again tomorrow, no problem.
but jumping
off of a 10-foot board, you're like, never.
Right, right. I know it doesn't make sense, but
in a clear chlorinated pool.
Right, I know, but I know, and sharks are good, and it upsets me when people are like, kill the shark or kill the snake, but we need apex predators, and sharks serve a very important role on the reef. So it upsets me when people get mad at the shark, and that was not the shark's fault. That was the diver's fault.
You know,
the shark doesn't want to eat a human being. He didn't go back for a second taste.
Right. that's good for that guy.
Yeah.
Good for that dude.
Yes.
Now, do you plan on writing a book about this year of adventures? And I know you're writing a book now, which we'll talk about next.
Yeah.
But do you plan on chronicling this in a more permanent form?
I want to. I know there's a book in me. There's an adventure book in me, and I'm not sure. Like you said, I'm working on another book right now, so I've got to get that one done. Please, God, let me get that one done. And then there's an adventure book, I don't know if it's Year of Adventure or Life of Adventure or How to Inject Adventure in Your Own Life, yes, absolutely.
So when you first started mentioning that you were writing a book, I just assumed that that's what
right.
it was.
That's
and
what everyone
then
thinks.
You
yeah.
went off to your writing retreat
yeah.
That you go to, which I want to have you describe, but you do go off on there every couple of weeks
yeah.
or so to
yeah.
probably just hole yourself up.
Yes.
And
it's brutal.
Gosh.
It's brutal. So I'm writing a book about J. David Bamberger, who people know him as the church's fried chicken mogul. But basically, Bamberger's now 89 years old, and he grew up very poor in Ohio, lost his dad in an accident, a crane crushed his father. Lost an older brother in World War II. Basically, after he went to school, he got out, he went into door-to-door vacuum cleaner sales and did really well at it, hired his own people to sell vacuum cleaners for him, door-to-door, and then met one of the guys in the church family, and the father had a couple of little fried chicken stores, so they kind of planned, they teamed up and they took over those stores, and they turned it into an empire of fried chicken stores, and he made a lot of money that way. But his heart, I guess, wasn't really in it, and he had, from the time he was a childhood, his mom had instilled this love of nature and the environment into him, and so he took that money that he had made through churches, found what he perceived as the crappiest chunk of land in the Texas Hill Country, and bought this worn-out, overgrazed ranch near Johnson City, and slowly but surely brought it back to life. He restored the land. He took out a lot of the ash, juniper, or cedar. He replanted native grasses, and now it's beautiful. And he's one of these old guys that has just great stories to tell, you know, of his life, of restoring the ranch, of, you know, accidentally standing up Lady Bird Johnson for dinner one night, like, all, you know, he's got them all. So,
yeah.
So I've been spending a lot of time out there just talking to him, and he's got a little house on the property that he very kindly, graciously lets me stay at. And I try to lock myself up in there and write, but it's been brutal. The book is due at the end of December, and it'll be on Texas A&M University Press. So I'm just really freaking out because I'm paralyzed with it. Talk about Year of Adventure. This is the hardest thing I have ever, ever done. And I think it's because it's a different way of writing. I'm used to writing about things that I experience, or watching other people do things, or being able to visually describe stuff. And this is not like it. This is a little bit of me. It's got a little bit of my story woven in, but it's somebody else telling their stories. And so that's a whole different animal for me.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
More biography or memoir for him?
No, yeah. Not exactly. Okay. It's what A&M wants is me kind of think of me in a pickup truck with David driving around this ranch, and he's showing me stuff. So it's my experience with David, and then his stories kind of inset into that. So his short tales that he tells, and he's got, you know, he has visitors out there all the time, and this man is fit. He's amazing. Yeah. You can't believe his age, and sharp and smart and funny and frugal, and, like, you know, I've only had one new car in my life. I had only had one new car in my life. And a year ago, I had that car for 15 years. A year ago, I bought a new car and drove it out to the ranch. And Jay David's like, what the hell is this? What are you doing with a new car? You shouldn't be driving a new car. Go get a used one. I was like, Mr. Bamber, it's not a fancy car. It's pretty cheap, actually. And it's only the second new car I've had, and I'm 53 years old.
Oh, man. So hilarious. He's frugal.
He drives a beat-up old pickup truck and prides himself on it, and he's great.
How did it come to be? Did A&M Press approach you?
So I had met Bamberger 7 or 8 years ago doing a story for the Statesman about his ranch and the work he had done out there, and then I went out another time for another story, and then didn't hear from Bamberger for a couple of years, and he called me one day and said, hey, you want to come out here and dig for projectile points? He's got this spot on his land that's a treasure trove of cool stuff. When you dig in, it's great. Yeah. So he invited me out there a couple of times, and he was telling me all these stories of his life. And I told Chris, I was like, I feel like he wants me to write those for him or help him write those. And sure enough, one day he said, you know, I want you to write my book. So, and then the pressure that comes with that, the terror of somebody putting that responsibility in your hands, I can't even describe. It's so scary, because I want to do him right, and I really respect the man. But at the same time, it's my book, So I'm trying to find that balance between his stories in my book and I don't know.
And you're juggling that with your day-to-day responsibilities here at the Statesman, plus your other adventures. Yeah. So it's not like...
And I'm traveling all the time. You know, I'm always on the road. So it's I'm going to be excited when that's behind me.
Yes.
When that book is behind me, I can get my life back. And I only have one full-time job maybe. Or I actually think I have 3 full-time jobs now. But
lots of side hustle. That's what I tell people. Yeah. I'm just a side hustler. Well, as we wind down, because I know you've got other people to chat with today as well, What events do you have coming up? What adventures embarking on?
Tomorrow, I'm heading out to Colorado Bend State Park. I'm doing an all-night adventure race that involves, I don't know everything it involves because it's kind of a surprise, but orienteering, mountain biking, trail running, paddling, and crawling through caves in the dead of night. So that'll be fun. And, you know, I'm trying to reserve the rest of this year. We've only got a few months left to write the book, so I'll be out at the ranch a lot working on that. Mm-hmm. So just kind of wrapped up most of my big time travel. Might squeeze in another trip to West Texas. Love Big Bend. Always trying to get out there. And, you know, some shorter camping stuff.
Yeah. So. And what's something about Pam LeBlanc that people might not know?
Ew.
I feel like you put yourself out there.
Okay, here's one thing that most people don't know about me. I secretly, this is so weird, everyone's going to think I'm strange. I secretly collect vintage Nancy Drew books from the 1940s. So I have this whole bookcase full of these old blue-backed books, and they're really interesting to read because it's shocking, actually. Like, you read them, and they're the bad guys are all dark-skinned and swarthy. And the good people are all, you know, well-dressed and blonde-haired. It's kind of crazy. But Nancy Drew is no longer like that. Nancy Drew is kind of my hero. So she, it's kind of funny looking back at it because she was an adventurous spirit, especially for her day and age. So maybe that's right.
It's funny.
And so she has these concise little fun orderly adventures, but she was doing things back in her day that other women weren't doing. So I kind of, it's funny, crazy that I never really thought of my attraction to her that way, but I just like her little roadster. Now
you're welcome.
Now I have my own little red convertible roadster, just like she does. So
That's so cool. Well, what parting advice would you give to people who are stuck in the, I could never do that.
Yeah.
I know you've kind of talked about it already, but just to sort of put the lid on not just your year of adventure, but your career of adventure.
Yeah. I mean, one thing is persistence. Don't let somebody tell you no. I mean, they can tell you no, but that doesn't mean you don't have to do it. Keep trying. Try to do something that you want to do. I also am a big believer in injecting a little bit of adventure into your life every day. And when I say adventure, it doesn't mean you have to rush off and climb Mount Everest. What I mean by adventure is do something that isn't part of your regular schedule. I mean, it could be as simple as get up early and go for a run someplace that you don't normally go or whatever. One thing that I did, it always comes back to nudity for me. I think this is a message, but one thing that I did last year was, there were 4 of us that did this. So 4 women, we decided that we were going to go to Barton Springs and do a naked mile. And we did it like in January, so it was cold. And so we got there.
Lots of things wrong with that.
But it was awesome. It was, so the funny thing was, so we went like, I don't know, 6 a.m. It was completely dark. There were 2 other people in the entire pool. And so we just, you know, we went down to the far end of the pool, shucked off all our clothing, jumped in and swam swam 1 mile. So, yeah. So the funny part of that was at one point, and I was with some fast swimmers. One of them was an Olympian. And at one point, we approached this guy in his full head-to-toe wetsuit. We were buck naked. And so we just swarmed around him, 2 women on either side, and just encircled him and passed him. And we got to the other end, and I was like, you know what? That guy had no idea that four beautiful naked women just swam by him, right? So it was awesome.
Oh, that's a great summary.
Yeah. So, and you know, be kind to yourself.
That's great. Pam, where can we find your writing, your social channels?
So I am online. I post almost all my fitness related stuff on the Fit City page on Facebook, facebook.com/FitCityAustin. Austin. Yeah. You can find me on austin360.com, statesman.com. I'm also on Instagram and Twitter. And oh my gosh, now I can never remember this.
And I'll certainly make sure I make links to all of these in all of the show notes.
My Instagram, Twitter is FitCityAustin. I also do some writing for Texas Highways and Texas Parks and Wildlife magazine, but it's stuff that I've covered in different ways for the Statesman. So Statesman is my first priority.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your time. I'm going to go get naked and run around town.
All right.
Right now.
I love it.
Have an awesome adventurous life.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You too.